work here. So what I'm going to talk about is some new direction, which we turned in. We're not the first ones, but I think it's a very exciting direction where there's still lots of promises. And I hope the results that I present here show you what can be done in this area. So the motivation comes from taking holography, or the idea that very strongly coupled theories can be described by gravity in one-dimensional hierarchy, particularly in anti-de Sitter gravity, and in sort of a classical approach. And so what you try to do is you try to study the strongly coupled dynamics using very simple gravity models. And so we're going to use ADS-CFT actually as a tool to study some of these strongly coupled critical theories. Now, the context where we're thinking about is actually in terms of condensed matter physics, where the critical theories arise as some quantum at the quantum critical point. The quantum critical point is nothing more than a phase transition, which is not driven by temperature, but is driven by some other parameter, the pressure, magnetic field, or anything else. And then what happens is if that at this point you have a second order phase transition, we all know that then you have universal critical behavior of it. But the interesting part about quantum critical points is that if you have a conformal field theory here, that conformal field theory also controls all the dynamics in this wedge-like region at finite temperature above it. And so in this region, you really have that very special dynamics that's not controlled by a perturbative theory, but by some scale-free interacting theory. Often it's not a Lorentz invariant theory, although at very low scales you may approximate it by that. But that's the region where we try to understand the physics that is going on. And just to show you that these are not esoteric ideas, here's an experiment in what's called a heavy fermion system, where people measured, in this case, the resistivity as a function of the parameter, in this case, the magnetic field. And you see, indeed, this very wedge-like region appear here, where the resistivity changes from a t-squared behavior to a linear in t behavior. Now this is in a specific heavy fermion physics, but the models I'll be thinking about, or where the things that we'll test in a moment might actually find experimental verification, are more like cold atom models, where they can engineer in quite detail various systems at a quantum critical point, particularly in 1+1 dimensions, but we might try to go even higher as well. So just as a gauge, so the point of ADS-CFT is that we have a beautiful quantitative dictionary between the physics of the CFT and the ADS gravity. For every operator in the CFT, there's a field in ADS. Global symmetries actually get mapped to gauge symmetries. The scaling dimension of this operator is mapped to the mass. And in particular, interesting for us, if you put the system at a finite temperature, that means the ADS geometry becomes black hole-like. Now, one of the remarkable aspects of CFT, of ADS-CFT, aside from this beautiful duality, is that when you compute objects in CFT in real time, you get a direct crossover to the hydrodynamic behavior. First of all, the fact that you can compute finite temperature objects real time is already quite a calculational leap forward, because in most models at finite temperature, this is very difficult. You compute in Euclidean time and you try to wick rotate to Lorentzian time. In ADS-CFT, on the other hand, you can compute in Lorentzian time directly. And moreover, then you don't have to do a scattering calculation and then try to Boltzmann evolve to get the collective behavior later. You immediately get the collective response of the full system right out at low frequencies. It tremendously simplifies your understanding of the collective behavior of the system. Here I have given an example of a linear response, of, in this case a current response, in one of the early applications of ADS-CFT to condensed matter systems. But there has been a generalization. So really, this real-time dynamics is very powerful. You can actually, some of this is analytical, some of it is numerical. You can combine the two and get extremely beautiful results out of the story. Moreover, as I said, it's fully non-equilibrium, right? And you get the transition to hydroid. Now, here is a linear response calculation. But this goes beyond linear response, okay, as we'll see in a moment. And moreover, you do this in a strongly coupled theory, in a critical theory. So this is really sort of the three remarkable aspects of ADS-CFT in the context of non-equilibrium systems. And it actually gives you such a new inroad into these things that you can actually try to maybe see whether there are new organizing principles for systems out of equilibrium. So that's sort of the guiding motivation of this story. So what are the exact questions that you may ask? Well, if you have some driven steady state, right, instead of an equilibrium state, you now force it, but you keep your force constant. What should happen is that the Boltzmann distribution should change. And you can ask, what are what is the distribution underlying that system? Or in a more ambitious way, is there some universality in this non-equilibrium dynamics? There are notions what's called Kibble-Zurek scaling, that is a driven-dependent scaling initiative, or famously Kolmogorov scaling in turbulent systems. And so these are the type of questions that you may ask. Now, we are not the first ones to ask it. This was set off mostly by Chesler and Jaffe in the context of avian physics. And since then, many, many, many people, including several groups here, have worked on this. Okay. Now, let me just say that in the context, a lot of this work has been done in the context of heavy ion physics, where you manifestly have a non-equilibrium system that is being probed. The quark-gluon plasma equilibrates quickly, but it also evolves. But in condensed matter, you know, some of these, there are very important measurements that rely precisely on these non-equilibrium notions. For instance, the most famously, perhaps, is the determination of the fractional charge in the fractional quantum Hall effect. It's actually determined from sort of knowing the fluctuations of the distribution around the driven state rather than the sort of average expectation values itself. Okay, so the motivation is this unique ability of holography to go beyond sort of equilibrium results. But in actuality, what I will show you here today is a combination where holography is just one of the key ingredients. We'll use holography, we'll use hydrodynamics, and we'll use quantum field theory notions at various moments in the calculation to get at the answer. And so this is a nice interplay of all kinds of aspects of theoretical physics. So what is the context? What is the actual experiment that I want to try to understand? So what we're going to do is we're going to try and do a thermal quench in 1 plus 1 dimensional CFTs. What we're going to do is we're going to imagine a setup where I have a conformal field theory, which has prepared on a half space, prepared at some temperature T left. And there's a similar, an exact copy of the same CFT prepared at a different temperature T right on the complementary half space. And at a time T is 0, we're going to let them interact with each other. And then see what happens. So your intuitive expectation when you do this is that what should happen is that the temperatures should equilibrate. And if you keep the endpoints fixed, you should get some temperature gradient in the system. This is not what happens. Okay? Okay? Instead, what you find is that you have an interface moving out at the speed of light. This is in a 1 plus 1 dimensional CFT. And in the intermediate state, you have a steady state with a non-zero heat current that transfers energy from the higher temperatures region to the lower temperature region. So the understanding of this steady state and its higher dimensional generalizations is what we're going to try to do. Now, your intuition is not completely false, because actually, if this is an idealized situation where this system is really on a half space all the way to infinity. If you would put it on a finite size space, essentially finite size effects will reverberate back and forth in your system and will equilibrate it like this. Okay? So it's just that the initial response of the system has this characteristic steady state in the middle. Okay? Now, in a 1 plus 1 dimensional CFT, you can actually completely sort of compute what happens here. This heat current is precisely equal, given in terms of the central charges of this CFT and the difference in the temperatures, right? And moreover, and this is some of the very interesting aspects that we're going to try to answer later on, not only do you know the average heat current, the expectation value, this is in a CFT, so you can also ask sort of questions about the various moments of the field. You actually know the full distribution of the heat current. Using the techniques of 1 plus 1 dimensional CFTs, you can compute the correlation function of any moment of the heat current with itself. It's given in terms of this generating function. Now, this is very nice, but what you would really like to know is sort of, we know the properties of this steady state in terms of correlation functions, but is there a better way to think about this object, right? Can we understand what this steady state is? It's not obviously a driven state, right? I'm not applying a constant force and just waiting for the system to get stationary and then try to measure its distribution. It's really a dynamical system, and if I were in a finite size system, it would eventually get a temperature gradient. Okay. Now, we're not the only ones that were wondering about this. There was a group in Berkeley that asked the same question. They thought it was kind of mysterious that happened. And so just to ensure that this is really what happens, what they did is they took an XXZ Hamiltonian, the following Hamiltonian, and put it on a lattice in a very special way where the lattice constant doesn't matter so much, called the density matrix for normalization group. And in that system, you can tune this to its critical point, and you can literally perform this exact experiment numerically. And what you indeed see is that after some time here, right, there is a homogeneous constant heat flow which arises from the system. This is the heat flow measured in the system for various parameters. So you really see that this calculation shows you the physics, what is happening. It's experimentally verified. Moreover, you can show exactly that the current is indeed given by an independent sum of the left part and the right part of the gradient. Now, in this 1 plus 1 dimensional system, there are actually, once you look a little bit further, there are quite some ways to understand what's going on. So we had this intuitive expectation that the temperature should relax, okay? But once you realize that this is a stationary state that's also homogeneous, right, you realize that that cannot be true. Because if I assume that I have a temperature gradient in this system, right, if I take energy momentum conservation, which just tells you that my stationary state, so this has to be zero, is equal to the pressure gradient in my system. But if this is zero, the pressure gradient must be zero. But in a 1 plus 1 dimensional zero system, the pressure is equal to minus the energy density. This is just the traces of a CFT. So that tells you that the stationarity just implies that there cannot be a temperature gradient in the system. Okay? So the fact that this heat flow is stationary, it remains the same throughout time, tells you that that this temperature gradient cannot be.
At very early times, does the intuition then apply? At very early times?
At very early times? No, at very early times, this doesn't apply either in a 1 plus 1 dimensional CFT. And that is actually very easy to understand from the second way to look at it. See, in a 1 plus 1 dimensional CFT, you have holomorphic factorization, which in simple words means that the left and the right movers of the system do not interact with each other. You have a bath of left movers and you have a bath of right movers. So left of the interface, initially, you have objects with momentum moving to the right at a temperature T left squared, and objects with a momentum moving to the left at temperature T left squared. They're each in equilibrium, but they essentially do not interact with each other. At the right of the interface, you have the same. The left and the right moving momenta are at the temperature T right squared. But right at the interface, you have left moving momenta that have a temperature T left squared. Right moving momenta. Excitations that have a temperature T left squared and left moving excitations that have a temperature T right squared. So when you let it go, these guys will evolve into the bath of the other, okay, right at the time T is zero. And that gives you this non-trivial transfer of energy between the two systems. But this, of course, is extremely special to 1 plus 1 dimensional systems. But it gives you a way to understand what's going on. Now, actually, how to compute what the heat current is, actually, is also very simple. If it's constant and homogeneous in a CFT, you can use scaling, right? Scaling just tells you that the heat current is a T0x, which is just dimension 1 plus 1, or 2. And it has to be odd under t left minus t right. So that means the only object it can be is this times some constant a. And then if you know the linear response of your CFT, which tells you that at linear response for a tiny fluctuation, right, or a tiny temperature difference, fixes the coefficients to be c pi over 12. So you really can understand this system in various ways. Now, what we would try to do is we want to try to see if we can generalize the system from 1 plus 1 dimensions to d plus 1 dimensions. And this is where holography can possibly give you a leg up. Because ADS-CFT, the duality between conformal field theory and ADS, doesn't depend on the dimensionality of the CFT. It doesn't rely on special features like holomorphic factorization and all that stuff. So let's see if we can first understand this 1 plus 1 dimensional model from holography, and then we can try to generalize it to higher dimensions. Okay? Now, it's extremely simple holography, because all we're talking about is a system at a finite temperature, and we're looking at the heat current. So everything that happens is only heat and momentum, right? And all that, or in other words, we're talking about properties of the stress tensor. So the only part of ADS-CFT that we need is essentially the graviton part, or in other words, Einstein, ADS-Einstein theory. So what we should look for is, let's focus on the steady state region first. Right? So then we need an asymptotically ADS solution to Einstein's equation with a constant, because the steady state has no time, and it's actually homogeneous over a range between these walls, unsourced heat current, because I'm not driving the system. Okay, so I have to solve, I can make an, I have to see if there's a solution to Einstein's equation, which is asymptotically ADS, that means, you know, with some expectation value for Tij, where Tij is of this form. And I've imposed tracelessness of the stress tensor. And all these guys are constant. They're not dependent on space and time. Okay. Now, it turned out there's a unique solution to this problem. The unique solution to this is essentially the boosted BTZ black hole. There is literally no other solution to these constraints. So this is a boosted BTZ black hole is precisely dual to a state with constant heat current. In a very simple way, essentially, because as you run by it, the system moves past you, and so it's transporting energy from the left to the right. Okay, so this is semi well known, but what it means is that you should identify. You can identify this novel steady state precisely coincides with this boosted equilibrium state if I make the following identifications. If I say T left is the T of the black hole in its own rest frame times the rapidity, and T right is T to the inverse rapidity. So then you get precisely this map between T0x is T left squared minus T right squared, if you substitute this in here, with the coefficient C pi over 12. So this might seem strange, but let me just remind you, there's at least one other example where you can understand take boosts to understand real transport in systems, which is the classical Hall effect. If you take the classical Hall effect, you take a system in it, which in its rest frame has just a magnetic field transfers to it, so and a zero electric field, therefore zero current. In the boosted frame, I get, due to the boost, I get an electric, apparent electric field and an apparent current. And the conductivity of this current is precisely the ratio of the density in units of the magnetic field. But this is precisely the classical Hall current if you would actually do an experiment where you impose an electric field and you impose a magnetic field like that. So this is just an example. Okay, so this idea that so this is new, this viewpoint that the way to understand the steady state is actually simply a boosted steady state, right, where the boost parameter is related to the difference in the temperatures of your quench setup. Now, once you realize that, you can actually check this in sort of your simplest CFT, where one plus one dimensional CFT. Let's take a free boson, which has many of the same properties of the 1 plus 1 dimensional CFT. It is the simplest 1 plus 1 dimensional CFT. And here you can do the boost explicitly at the microscopic level. And what you indeed find is that the boost current, the boosted current, is precisely equal to the heat current after you what you indeed find is that if you both boost it and do this quench, you find the same answer for the heat current, which is equal to the sinh to eta, where the parameter identification is exactly as was predicted by holography. Okay. So this is easy to understand. And now the other aspect that we wanted to understand, remember, is we wanted to go beyond just understanding the averages of the current. We wanted to understand all these higher order moments. Well, in 1 plus 1 dimensional CFT, this is actually very easy to understand how this works. If you think of the partition function as follows, again, in 1 plus 1 dimensional CFT, but in holography as well, you have factorization. And so you immediately get this generating function just from the fact that you have factorization in left movers and right movers in the system. And this works the same in ADS as in the 1 plus 1 dimensional model. In fact, you can do even better in holography. Because of this factorization property, and actually all the sort of all the solutions to Einstein's equations in ADS are known. The Einstein's equation in ADS, the generic solution is of the following form, where you have a left moving function and a right moving function. These are unknowns, okay? But this is the most general solution that you can write down, and it relies on this factorization property that is so special to 1 plus 1 CFT, or in this case, ADS3. And then it's very easy to figure out for the exact full quench setup, right, what the heat current is. The heat current is zero outside of my two domains, and it's finite within the domains. And so you can immediately write down what the full solution is in holography dual to this quench. So this is not a statement about the steady state alone. This is actually the complete solution. And indeed, in the steady state region, you can show that this reduces precisely to the metric of a boosted black hole with the parameters that we identified. So holography gives you an insight into it. There are some aspects of holography that are clearly not going to carry over. For instance, this part, because it relies again on factorization. But the notion that you can might identify this steady state as a boosted black hole, that doesn't seem to depend particularly on the dimensions. Okay? So in particular, right, if there is an equivalent phenomenon in higher dimensional CM systems, right, then if such a steady state exists, what should it look like? Well, again, the same sort of uniqueness story comes to hand. ADS says that the unique non-singular, it's a little bit less general, there are now singular solutions as well. But if you insist that the solution is non-singular, the stationary gravity solution dual to a state with a homogeneous constant heat flow is, again, the boosted black plane. Okay? So it tells you that if I would do this experiment with a higher dimensional CFT, and you find that such a steady state emerges, holography tells you that you should think of this steady state, again, simply as a boosted equilibrium state. I have not yet said whether this state exactly, in fact, occurs after a thermal question. So let's see. So from that, I'm actually going to now go from holography to hydrodynamics. Now, why do I go to hydrodynamics? The point is that the fact that this state is the boosted equilibrium state, and an equilibrium state is actually equilibrium, is the basis for hydrodynamics. The fact that it's boosted shouldn't matter at all, right? It means that I can still use hydrodynamics also in this intermediate region, where I thought I was studying some very complicated non-equilibrium system. But in fact, the hidden notion, the hidden realization that it is simply the boosted equilibrium state means that I can just use hydrodynamics throughout my system. Okay? So 1 plus 1 dimensional conformal hydro is, of course, very simple. There are only two variables in my system. I can solve the hydrodynamics exactly. I don't have to go to a fluid element description. There's only the energy density and the heat current. And then the equations of hydrodynamics are simply these equations. So remember, all these factorization arguments means that essentially the system is integrable and there's no dissipation in the system. And then what happens is the heat current is essentially this sum of step functions. And the energy that you can, the energy density is essentially this step here where this is T left and T right. So this is the system from a hydrodynamic point of view. Okay? Where here you can think of what happens here as a sort of instantaneous thermalization of the system. This is precisely the final state temperature that you would expect. Now, what happens in higher dimensions? Okay? So now in higher dimensions, due to the setup of your system, that I take my system on a half space, I do have an effective dimensional reduction to a 1 plus 1 dimensional system. But in this case, I can have dissipation in my system, all right? Because the system is no longer integrable, and energy can be exchanged between the various constituents. So the physics of what happens here is that I have two sound fronts, right? In 1 plus 1 dimensional CFT, sound and light move at the same speed. But in hydrodynamics, you think in terms of sound. So I have two sound fronts moving out at the speed of sound. And so what happens in higher dimensions due to dissipation, what could happen is simply that these sound fronts decay. And you get back to your picture of thermalization with this temperature gradient in the system. Well, that's one thing that could happen. Or what could happen is that, in fact, these sound waves survive. It's just that the dissipation will sort of spread them out a little bit. So what happens? Well, here the knowledge that you have this boosted thermal, that you would have this boosted thermal state in the system gives you the crucial insight to solve this system. Let's assume that this homogeneous steady state in the center exists. Try to solve the system. If we run into a contradiction, obviously we're in trouble. But otherwise, we should find what's happening. So if we assume that this state exists and we have these two sound fronts moving out, I essentially have a two-shock solution. In hydrodynamics, this is known as the Riemann problem. And the knowns in this problem are the left temperature and the right temperature. But there are four unknowns in this problem. It's the steady state temperature. That's the temperature in its own rest frame, right? So the boost parameter, to get it into the boosted thermal state, there's this sound front moving out at a velocity u left, and there's this front moving at a velocity u right. Now, remember, the knowledge of this is crucial to solve the system. In a moment, I'll write down four constraint equations that follow from the laws of hydrodynamics, and I have precisely four unknowns, so this allows me to solve the system. But if I didn't know what this state was, I would just write down an arbitrary state in the middle, which had some heat transport and some energy density and some various pressures. I would have four unknowns, and I could not solve this system. So that insight from holography is crucial to figure out what's going on. Now the system, now we have put the input from holography, and now we're going to use hydrodynamics to solve it. Well, the idea is very simple. If I have a stationary state here, a stationary state here, and a stationary state here, the local support of the stress tensor should be essentially only at these fronts. It should only have this dependence on x and t. And then what you simply do is you integrate the equations of hydrodynamics across the shock. This tells you there has to be zero. But by using the fact that this only depends on u left, you can convert both of them to spatial derivatives, and then you can do the integral, and it tells you something about how the energy and pressure on one hand of the integral are related to the pressure at the other bound of the integral. And this way you get four equations for four unknowns, because I have an index mu here. I can put that in the time direction or in the spatial direction, and I have two shocks, four equations for four unknowns, and I get a unique solution, which looks a little bit complicated. But it's the following form, okay? So the temperature of this black of this equilibrium boosted equilibrium state in its own rest frame is the geometric mean of the left and the right temperatures. The velocities, I'll tell a little bit more in a minute, but they're these complicated combinations. The boost velocity of the state is also a complicated combination in terms of the ratio of the T left and the T right temperature. So what happens is that you see that these velocities are neither recognizable as the speed of sound, or the speed of light. In units where the speed of light is 1, which we're using, right, there's some horrible combination. And the speed of sound in a d-dimensional CFT is 1 over d, 1 over the square root of d, sorry. So what actually is, what happens is that these shocks are some nonlinear sound waves, right? Their product is precisely the speed of sound squared. But they depend very sensitively on the initial ratio of the temperatures T left and T right. And they essentially interpret between the speed of light when T left is 0. Then essentially, if you have a CFT where you have something at finite temperature and there's nothing on the right-hand side, all your elementary excitations move at the speed of light. So it moves with the speed of light into emptiness, up to some parameter, which is the speed of sound squared divided by the speed of light. It interprets between these two values in this very special way. Moreover, note that they are actually asymmetric, right? It's not that the speed of light, so it means that if the speed of, at some t left over t right, the speed of the right shock wave is very different than the speed of the left shock wave. Okay? So this they are not sort of moving out from x to 0 in the same speed. One is moving characteristically faster than the other. Now, you may wonder whether all this is just a bit too quick algebra. So what we actually did is we confirmed this with numerical ideal hydrodynamics, where we try to approximate the quench setup. We can't do the exact quench. Now Wilke's question does matter. Now right at t is 0, you don't have very good control, but you sort of smooth it out. So you have some smoothed out quenched initial conditions, and then you let the system evolve according to hydrodynamics. And you see exactly the result that we did. So now I'm putting no input from holography in it. I'm just solving hydrodynamics explicitly. And what you see indeed is that for two different temperatures, you see two shock waves that when the temperatures are very close to each other, look almost symmetric. But the moment you make the temperatures very different, you can see the asymmetry between them. And these red lines are exactly the predictions according to our formula. And this is the difference between in the energy density between the exact local energy density and that of the intermediate steady state. And this red line, again, is the prediction analytically that we made based on a boosted equilibrium state. So you see both the velocities and the steady state come out exactly. So we have both the holographic and the hydrodynamics gives you some insight here. There's an extremely obvious question now, which is, let me answer them, is that we did ideal hydrodynamics. And I said one of the worries when you go to higher dimensions is you have to worry about dissipative effects. Right? You can have energy loss in this system. Now, there's a very simple reason why actually the dissipative effects, once you know what's going on, cannot change this picture that you have these two nonlinear sound waves moving out. If the difference between the temperatures is very small, I can actually solve, again, the hydrodynamics completely analytically in linear response, including dissipation. So this is the diffusion constant in the direction parallel to the parallel to the x-axis. And you see that, as usual, the dissipative behavior grows as the square root of t, which is smaller than the distance between the shocks, which grows linearly as t. So it means that what happens is that my shocks still move out with exactly the same velocity as I calculated in the ideal hydrodynamics. It's just that they slowly grow over time with as a square root of t. And actually, there was a group at the University of Washington who studied essentially the same system. They did the full dissipative hydrodynamics analysis also beyond linear response, and they seen exactly the same thing. So the idea that dissipation doesn't change this result is correct. There is one other effect in higher dimensional hydrodynamics beyond dissipation, is that you can also have turbulent flow. Okay, so there I cannot say anything here. The assumption built into this whole story is that this interface between our two systems is completely smooth and regular. such that it reduces to effective 1 plus 1 dimensional hydrodynamics, if there are small irregularities in this, it may set off some turbulent behavior, which completely destroys the picture that I have here. I have no comment on that at all. Okay, so this was the holographic part, the fact that we had this boosted equilibrium state, plus the hydrodynamics part, the fact that we could combine the input from the boosted holographic state with the laws of hydrodynamics to solve exactly what happens after this crunch. Now there's one more aspect of it. Remember, one of the crucial parts, or one of the very interesting parts in the 1 plus 1 dimensional case, was the fact that not only could they figure out what happened to the average macroscopic properties, the heat flow, the energy density, but they could also figure out what happened to all the higher moments of these quantities. So let's see if we can do that here too. Right? So far, we've looked only at the expectation values of the stress tensor. But what we are interested in particular, is the higher order moments, or the cumulants. And we're especially interested, because this is sort of experimentally what you would figure out, we're especially interested in the cumulants of the heat current located at the interface. So we're not going to try to solve the higher order moments in general, everywhere. We're only going to try to solve those located at x is 0, but then for all time. Or since this is a stationary state, this essentially is a time independent. Okay? Now, in 1 plus 1 dimensional CFTs, we had this object, this recursion relation, which allowed us to compute all the higher order moments from an analytic continuation of the expectation value for the heat current itself. It turns out that here, the same thing happens in higher dimensions. And in a moment, I will show you exactly how. So if you collect all the cumulants in a generating function, then this, you can write this extended fluctuation relation as follows. Right? And it turns out that this extended fluctuation relation, this is only true for the currents at x is equal to 0. In 1 plus 1 dimension, it holds more general. And in d plus 1, it only holds for the currents at x equals 0. But there, again, it holds. So let me show you how this works. Okay, so this is some insight in finite temperature field theory. So let's take an operator, any operator, at a time t, which by definition, it's just the evolved operator from time t is 0. Now, what we want to do is, there's a simple identity. This row here is the initial density matrix. So my initial density matrix depends on my left temperature and my right temperature. So this essentially is e to the minus beta left h left, e to the minus beta right h right, right? Where h left and h right are literally the Hamiltonian for the left part and the right part of my system. So this is sort of a trivial identity, given that you know what the initial density matrix of my system. This holds for any operator, because we assume that the operator itself doesn't depend on our initial state. Okay? Now, at late times, right, I can take an operator O that's sort of localized in the region of my steady state. All right? And then I can just do, since the steady state is stationary, I can just do a time translation where I evaluate this at t is 0, and I have time evolved my Hamiltonians backward in time. I've just shifted time by number minus t, so that my time evolution is now in the Hamiltonian and not in the operator. Now the point is, in this steady state, I have local energy conservation, right? The change of the energy density in my right Hamiltonian must equal the energy absorbed in my left Hamiltonian. And this must equal the total heat current. This is all at the location x is 0 across this interface. This is where the location x is 0 is crucial. Okay. Now, if you combine this with parity and time reversal symmetry, in other words, that h left minus h right is the same as h left minus t minus h right minus t, then you can write this equation. You can integrate this equation as follows, which tells you that this combination is just twice the integral of the heat current between minus t and t. And now this comes from here by using the fact that this is h left minus h right, right? And using the t minus t translation invariance, you can just you write down the following identity that for any operator in the that is localized in the steady state region, this identity holds. Okay? Or this is the heat current J. And if you now substitute for the operator O itself the heat current, you get the exact fluctuation relation that you had on the other page. I didn't write down the last thing. But this is the essence of the proof. The crucial part is the energy conservation at the location x is 0 across the flow. OK. So we've seen that one plus one dimensional CFTs show some novel steady states with a homogeneous heat flow after this thermal quench. And the first thing that we noted is that the steady state can be identified as the boosted thermal equilibrium state. And in particular, the next thing is that the same thing happens in higher dimensional CFTs. An intermediate steady state appears, and holography tells you that this steady state has to be the boosted equilibrium state. Then, knowing that essentially everything except at the shocks is determined by hydrodynamics, you can use hydrodynamics with some interfaces to solve the full system, and you get these two nonlinear sound waves that emanate from the interface. Moreover, all the higher order moments follow from energy conservation. And this is information that goes beyond the hydrodynamics in the system. So here you see the three aspects that I advertised at the beginning appear in the various times. There's an obvious way we can generalize it is that what we've looked here is we've worried about dissipation. But in real life systems, there are often impurities, or you're trying to do this in a condensed matter system which has an underlying lattice. Momentum is not always strictly conserved, and you can worry about the various effects of those. It turns out in some, I will not show it here, but that certainly to first order, this doesn't change the story at all. The second thing you can do is we've only looked at the energy sector and the momentum sector in the system. But you can also add a chemical potential to the story, give it also a discontinuity, and start try to understand what's going on there. And the third one, this is sort of very interesting from a real-life perspective, whether in higher dimensional systems, the turbulence may or may not destroy. And the ultimate goal is to see if you can actually engineer some of these situations in actual cold atom experiments, or maybe as an intermediate step in some of these numerical approaches to critical systems in condensed matter. So that was what I wanted to tell you. Thank you very much for your attention.
Questions?
In the system, you have this slightly discontinuous, slightly counterintuitive discontinuity. Did you also look at the black hole horizon? Is the discontinuity also there?
If you would do the full quench holographically, yes, then there should be some discontinuity. You should have some discontinuous horizon as your initial conditions, and then you can try to evolve.
You solve the full metric analytically.
We haven't solved in the higher dimensional case. We have not solved the full quench holographically. That would require sort of numerical GR techniques.
In ADS3, the horizon is kind of trivial.
In ADS3, you can solve it analytically, so you don't have to go to numerical generality.
Other questions?
What happens when I go past zero if I ran it, continue running backward? Have I just run into a singularity of t equals zero? Or?
In the hydrodynamic simulation?
Yeah, I mean, you wrote down some solution, say, for the black, the 1 plus 1. So what's it doing beyond t equals zero?
Beyond t equals zero? That's a good question. I think you get a mirror image, right?
Yeah, I couldn't think.
Yeah. I mean, since essentially you have these two shock waves, right? So essentially what will happen is that these shocks, they move through each other and they mirror image each other, even though that's it's hard to think of the physical situation it corresponds to, but that's what would happen.
I mean, is the GR solution so difficult? Could you do some sort of like Israel junction conditions and you know, solve the shock version of the gravity problem? You know, so just be equivalent boosted by brains and then you have a shock void by Israel junction.
Yeah, so the crucial part is actually, so we tried that. But the crucial part is to solve the junction conditions. You need to know the state on both sides of the junction. Then you can solve the junction conditions. So that's essentially what we did here, right? In strict ADS, it's a little bit more complicated because this junction now moves in the radial direction. It's not as clear what happens. That was our initial approach to try to solve it. Then we realized that in the intermediate region, it's just boosted black rain, and we didn't have to solve the full dynamics.
More questions? Well, let's think on it again.